kids ever have that feeling like, I can't get a thing done? And because I can't get a thing done, the whole operation is ruined. Like, me as a person, I'm broken. It would be as though Microsoft Word keeps crashing. And I think, well, God, I guess the computer's a piece of trash. Computer's broken. Well, today we have a special guest on who's going to talk about the three pillars of task management. His name is Sam Young. He's here. Let's go. You are listening to ADHD Big Brother, the podcast for adults struggling with their ADHD and comorbid depression symptoms. Yeah. I'm your host, Russ Jones, author of Descending to the Top, believer that you can actually have a smile in your life despite this diagnosis. So let's make some sense out of this struggle. Let's learn some stuff. Let's laugh at some stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, here's some stuff. Welcome to the podcast, you guys. Thanks for having me over to your ear canals today. Today's an interview one, so those are always longer, but, you know, they kind of have to be sometimes, you know, there's so much juicy info that we got to get out. So today we have Sam Young, Master of Education, or it's Mr. Sam, as his community members call him. He's the founder and director of Young Scholars Academy, which is a strength-based, talent-focused virtual enrichment school that supports twice exceptional, differently wired, and gifted students to feel seen, nurtured, and happy as heck. Sam is a two-time Fulbright Scholar, a former Bridges Academy educator of nearly 10 years. What? And a Bridges Graduate School of Cognitive Diversity graduate. But the guy's smart, okay? He knows a couple of things. He's a neurodivergent person himself, and we hit it off. I mean, two neurodivergos hanging out in a room where you're going to hit it off. He has committed his life to supporting neurodivergent students, helping them discover, develop, and lead with their strengths, talents, and unique interests. You want to hear our conversation? The guy's awesome. You want to hear me talk to an awesome guy? Come on. Here it is.
Can you tell me what your particular origin story is? Usually everybody that comes on to an ADHD show, we all want to know, when did you find out? When did you find out you had it? And what's your origin story? How did you get to be, when did you find out? And then how did you get to be where you are now with the Young Scholars Academy?
So I've had sort of a, kind of several like overlaying rings, if you will, like sort of journeys on stacked on top of one another, like a sandwich or something. But when I was in fourth grade, I was diagnosed with ADHD actually for the first time, but it goes back before then. I was always struggling in school. I loved content. I loved learning, but I struggled with the way in which we were supposed to do it. So my desk was always, you know, locked up next to the teacher's desk. I was right there. I wasn't like a quote unquote like trouble kid, but I caused trouble by accident because I just couldn't sit still and I had a hard time with things. So I'd find other things to do. So in kindergarten, I remember like doing circle time. I like sneak off and I'd rig all the blocks. I was like, oh, these cylindrical ones will slide if I build a ramp and then I can tuck them behind other blocks. So if kids don't know and they pull the wrong one out, they're going to get smacked by these rollers. Like it was like a video game, you know, and that was just intriguing. And, you know, ADHDers are fundamentally, I know this as an adult, like we're dopamine chasers, right? So, I wasn't getting the dopamine in certain places. In fact, I was getting embarrassed. So I'd go other places. So fourth grade, I got the first diagnosis of ADHD and we went and did some different reading support as well. We did I'm a millennial. So it was like phonics was the thing. We were doing like phonics stuff and I had a tutor. And then again, when I got into high school, about 10th grade, I had this whole like, I'm stupid, I'm not a good reader thing. You know, like I'm bad, I'm dumb, it takes me forever. Like every day after school, my friends would go play and I would go home and sit at the kitchen table and bless my mom. She'd help me with homework and reading. And it just took me longer. Mm-hmm. And we were really good. She was like, hey, let's experiment. Like put my desk up against the wall and put it up against the window and always moving the pieces around to figure out like an experiment. But 10th grade, I hit another ceiling. And that was when I went on medication because I was taking different classes and I just couldn't get the work done. And then I got off the meds because that was difficult. And then again in college, I was like, let me just triple check and see if I have ADHD.
Let me do it one more time.
You can try these non-stimulants because I was having, you know, with ADHD comes anxiety and depression, right? As a comorbidity sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those meds really were messing me up a great deal. And even still as an adult, like I struggle with, you know, sometimes in the morning, it's like, do I want to make this deal? Do I want to, you know, lock into this?
Oh,
you know,
I resonate with that. Yeah. Like the for me, it's the tail end. It's when the medicine's wearing off. I have to be
exactly.
Is it worth it? The anxiety, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had a moment. Sure. It's like the Matrix, you know, it's like when Morpheus has like the two pills, right? It's like, which way do you want to go? And it's like every morning, I'm like, which way do I want to go? And I found, I collect data. I'm like, I take Ritalin. I used to take Adderall. I've taken everything under the sun, but I'm like, I can't take more than this much in this many days. So I'm like, I'm going to do 1-2 days, then I'll take a day off. You know, so I've kind of found that. But I had a breaking point in college when I was walking across my campus, speaking of meds, and my roommate at the time yelled. He's like, you took your meds, huh? And I was like, you know, we probably like 100 yards away, 50 yards away, maybe. We walk up. Uh-huh. I'm like, how'd you know? And he's like, you just don't have any pep in your step when you take that stuff. And I thought, oh, man, that's sad.
God, you know? Damn it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I stopped taking it for a while. And you know, yeah, it's part of the struggle, right?
God, that is such a bummer. Just hearing that breaks my heart, because it's the idea of there's this natural thing that we have that makes us so excitable and impulsive and fun and all that stuff. And what we want is clarity and focus and be able to do things and be productive and blah, blah, blah. But sometimes the medicine, which allows us to do that, then takes away from the, I don't know, our zest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's such a, yeah, I don't like hearing that. That's a bummer, dude.
It's difficult, you know, it's a difficult thing. And it really has to do, I think a lot about this with like a societal goal, right? It's like, what are we trying to do, right? So many people are taking stimulants and things, and they, you know, from a, there's like the 7 perspectives in psychology, right? It's like, we can look at these things any different way. We can take like a psychoanalytic Freudian perspective. We can look at like the medical model, and from the medical biological model, it's like, well, you might just have less of a neurotransmitter, or you might have different balances of dopamine, things like that, that we can tweak with medicine. And that intellectually makes sense. The fundamental challenge that comes with that is it's very much like a fix it model, right? It's like, I got to fix myself with these meds. I got to fix these things that I do or don't do. And that becomes a part where I take issue. I think that's a challenging element, because it's like, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think that it then becomes I don't know if it's a question or it's a battle or an inner battle of like, am I losing who I am? Am I losing my personality or my character because I'm taking this medicine? I debate that stuff in my brain a lot.
It's a tough one. And that's why I say it's societal, right? It's like there's this cartoon I love. It's a teacher at a desk, and there's like 7 animals. And the teacher says, for today's test, you must climb the tree, right? And it's like a goldfish and a sparrow, right? And an elephant. It's like all these animals have incredible strengths. But if you ask them all to do the same thing, they're not all going to pass that test, right? It makes so much sense there.
Yeah.
But in society, everybody's got to read. You have to be able to do the same skills, you know, grammar, phonics, all these things. So I think that fundamentally we're at a line with what everyone like needs to do in terms of core competencies. And a lot of people do require medicine to do something that's out of their strength area, right? Like if you want me to, you know, I know someone, let's say, not even using myself, I have a friend who's a brilliant mechanic. He like sleeps in his garage. He's incredibly talented. He reads a book a day. I mean, he's just so smart.
Wow.
And if you're like, hey, get up and, you know, talk about this thing in an intellectual way, he kind of freezes because he has a hard time presenting. All right. But it's like, but this guy's reading, like, he's reading primary documents at 5 a.m. And then, you know, in his head, he can dissect and calibrate and do machine work. And I'm like, he's a genius. But we're asking, as a society, we're not valuing his genius. We're asking everyone to do something very different.
Oh, and yeah. Sam, this ties into exactly what you're even here to talk about. So we have to get to your Young Scholars Academy, but like you literally just touched upon it, which is when we were having our conversation before, and I have such an oppositional nature, and I've never seen ADHD as a gift. I'm like, oh yeah, here's a gift that I have to take medicine for. That doesn't make any sense to me. And so I'm like, can I rewrap it? Can I give it back? How? But when you, I was talking to you, you had mentioned it in a way that I'd never really resonated with before. And that was not in terms of it's a gift, but in terms of playing to your strengths. And you had I'm gonna butcher it. So you just talk about it. The pillars. Like, can you talk about that or what we talked about?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that the gift thing is a funny one, right? It's like, I didn't sign for this. It's complex. Everything is multidimensional, right? Nothing breaks down to good or bad or right or wrong. And so ADHD is complex. And so that oppositional part, by the way, is a strength. How your brain
Yeah,
works,
yeah. See,
right?
I was bragging about it.
Exactly. You're finding holes and gaps and exploiting them, right? That's entrepreneurship and creative problem solving and identification. What I like to refer to, Russ, is the three pillars of task management, right? So one of the biggest things that ADHDers struggle with is this idea that I can't get things done, right? I can't get things across the line. And really what we're referring to is, I think one of the most important things we can do is draw a delineation. There are two things in this world of ADHD, right? There's our intelligence and our brain and the things that we can do. And then there's the doing skills, right? So there's like, think of it like ability, right? Like interest, strengths, abilities, et cetera. And then there's the doing. And the second world of doing is executive function skills, right? And it's really important to start here before I'm answering your question in a roundabout way, but it's important to understand how the brain works, right? This prefrontal cortex, the front part of our brain, especially in ADHDers, just curious, do you know when it's supposed to develop, when it's supposed to, I'm using air quotes for anyone listening, when it's supposed to develop for ADHDers?
It's supposed to develop.
Right.
I hear that it's super late, right?
Yeah.
Is it like in your 20s or something like that?
Yeah, it's 27.
Which is ridiculous. The amount of drugs I did in my early 20s.
So if you think of that like it's the air traffic control part of your brain, right? So part of us is, you know, we're saying, hey, these things, I can't get my work done. It's like, well, look at your brain, like look at brain scans. Like it's not reasonable to even expect that, right? I think that gives people a lot of grace. So I like to start there. If you look at ADHD brains and brain scans, brains are like thumbs. They're all different, right? Everyone has a different print, but they're trending towards later prefrontal cortex development between 27 and 30 of ADHDers. So understanding that air traffic control part, that part that tells you to do, to not do, to delay, right? That part that helps us reflect on our learning styles and hold on to ideas for working memory. That's all developing. It's wet cement. So it's just important to keep that in mind and kind of use that to give ourselves grace and reset, right? I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Then on top of that, though, there are things that we can do to help ourselves out, which are these, again, task management. I break into three pillars. Okay. Instead of just saying, oh, I suck at getting things done, or I can't ever get stuff done. Right. It's like, hold on. Where's the breakdown? Right. Is it that you just, can you objectively suck at getting things done? I don't know, maybe, but I believe it's more specific. So when we break it down, there's three key elements. There's capturing ideas. Right. First, you have to record what you even need to do in the first place. Mm-hmm. And many ADHDers struggle with this because they're really kind of spontaneous. And a lot of it is like stimulus based input and output. Right. Why do I have really good ideas in the shower?
Yeah.
Something cathartic about not working, having hot water on me. There's no other stimuli. You know, all of a sudden, boom, I've got 10 ideas, but I don't write them down. Crap.
Yeah. And would you even say that that's the thing where, So I have an idea, so I'm going to write it on the back of a bill. I have a thought that I'm going to do something, so I'll put it on a post-it over here. I've got this notebook over here. And so it's just the ideas are just vomited wherever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's quick capturing. That's phase one. That's column one. We have to capture our ideas. And then there needs to be an element. I like to do a nightly and, you know, one in the night, one in the morning, where I'm bringing them together. So whether it's a sticky, a napkin, voice note, whatever. We distill them together. So it's a full capture. Okay. So for me, I have a whiteboard in my shower, actually. I have sticky notes next to my bed. Yeah. I've got magnets, like sticky notes all over my house. And then I keep voice notes on my phone because most of my ideas are audio. What I try to do is I try to keep like a pure palette. So using your phone to write ideas down can be really messed up because you go to write the idea down and then there's other stimuli, right? It's like walking up to a slot machine with your own agenda, right? Like
yeah,
the second you go up to the phone, you're like, wait, what was I going to do? Pull the lever, right? So, you know, that slot machine's there for one purpose. Your phone is there to distract you largely. So right. I try to have a blank canvas. So that's tier one, quick capture. Can you record ideas, capture them? And then that brings us to tier two, which is, can you prioritize them? Okay. Now you have an idea. Can you look out over the week, the month, the quarter, the day even, and just say, here's all the stuff I have to do. Let me shuffle the deck based on these different frameworks. And this is where I nerd out. We were talking earlier about nerding out before the episode started.
Yeah.
This is where I go deep. And that's in the resource that I'm going to share with you. I've got a list of like 20 different ones on there, whether it's like the, you know, eat the frog method or the Eisenhower matrix or, you know, whatever it might be. There's so many different. And this is where, like, you know, everybody's out to make a buck too. Like a lot of people are selling books, you know, getting things done method and the system. And there's a lot of stuff. It's fun to learn about it. I think it's important to learn about it. And then I say Frankenstein it, you know, find out what's out there and then build something that makes sense for you.
That's brilliant. The idea, because I'm a hardcore iterate fan, like try everything, you know, like a vegetable, try it a couple of times. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But then if an element of it works, then grab that element and then garbage the rest. I love the idea of Frankensteining is brilliant. I love that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think it's really important to give things an honest try too. Like, you know, a lot of, again, the dopamine idea, like a lot of us are like, oh, it didn't work, you know, scrap it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, did you really try? You know, yeah, I know you tried it once and it was last Tuesday and that was an off day, right? It's like, give everything a control. I'm going to try this for 5 days. I'm going to commit to this for 5 days, you know, and then collect data. What worked, what didn't work, why? That's where I think we're going to get the good data and then build the thing. So yeah, see what's out there. You know, there's everybody's lots of gurus and hacks and ideas and things, mm-hmm. but check out different things. But I think at the core, and in the resource I share, there's an article that addresses like, what kind of learner are you? Like, are you doing something that's completely out of whack with your strengths? Like if you're kinesthetic, right? Or you're like tactile, right? You need to touch stuff, move stuff. You're using a digital planner. It's not going to work, buddy. You know, it's just not, it doesn't make sense with the way your brain works. If you like to touch and move and manipulate, you're wasting your time trying to keep things in a spreadsheet, you know, even if there is a cool algorithm in there.
Yeah, that's a really good, because I'm a hardcore bullet journal guy, the physical journal. Anytime I've ever done anything on a phone or even a digital recorder, I have about 1,000 voice recordings, and I don't think I've ever listened back to one of them. But the physical bullet journal thing and the feel of writing to me, if it's the right pen and it's the right kind of paper, I am in heaven. So that I totally get. I love that.
Yeah. And I think it's just about bringing that. And as adults, we need to get that awareness. And then as parents, we need to bring that awareness to our kids. Like they may jump to a big conclusion. I'm bad at blank, right? And it's like, well, how'd you try? And what'd you try? And where to break down? The kind of workshopping that, like, again, most people, I think as adults, don't even arrive at these conclusions.
Oh, yeah.
We say broad stroking big things like I'm bad at organization. It's like you have a super tidy interior of your car. Well, yeah, that's different. Is it? Or is it just that it's kinesthetic, you know?
Totally. We have just such a, I think we have such a historical backlog of negative self-loathing reflecting thoughts that we're up against. I understand that broad thinking of like, oh, it's because I suck. This didn't work for me because I'm a big dumpy loser. Like, oh, that's the answer. that kind of stuff frustrates me.
That's like the commitment to my life's work, right? It's strengths-based perspective, right? How can we shift from deficits, which is bringing the bottom up, to strengths, which is building the top up? My favorite psychologist, who was the mentor to my mentor, this guy, Dr. Joseph Ranzulli, he said, it doesn't get better than this. One sentence changed my life. He said, no one cares about Einstein's ability to paint, or Pablo Picasso's ability to do complex math. So why are we so focused on the things that we're not doing well and fixing them, right? Like, we want, if you're incredibly good at something, develop that. Like, let's build in scaffolds to help you get things done in that space, but don't spend your whole life kicking your own butt about. And I get it, by the way, I do it, right? But it's like, if we could just be a little bit more gracious with ourselves and spend a little less time like comparing and focusing on, and that's part of the ADHD brain, right? It's like quick data collection and all this stuff. But if we could just spend a little bit more time focusing on, yes, I'd like to get better at being organized. Yes, I'd like to do more of it like this. But if I can do it in the places where I'm strong and where I'm interested, where I'm passionate, it's going to be a lot easier because, again, we're dopamine chasers, right? Like,
yeah, you're making me think about all the, I'm like, well, what are my wins? What are the things that I'm good at? And I was thinking about, this is so random, but I downgraded my wardrobe to the most simplest form of, like, I have polo shirts for when I'm going to work. I have t-shirts for when I'm at home, and they're all the same brand. I have a pair of pants that's loungy. I have a pair of pants that's go outy. And I'm like, that make simplifying my life is such a, has been such a good process for me. And that's something that I feel like I'm good at. Wow, that's cool. Hey, you're making me self-reflect in a positive way, instead of like, what do I suck at? Oh, I have to downgrade my wardrobe because I don't know how to have a big wardrobe because I'm dumb.
Yeah,
what's the right perspective there?
And that's a strength. It's like, okay, those are things that come with ADHD, right? You're like making systematization decisions. Like, what are the factors upon which I will keep these clothes, right? If they meet these criteria, right, they stay. If they don't, they go. And that can be a double-edged sword. It can work really well, or it can take us down the rabbit hole, right? I need to go through my whole wardrobe now because, you know, this is way more fulfilling than doing the real stuff I need to do, right?
Yeah, but, right, exactly.
But that can be a win. Like, there you go. And I think that a lot of ADHDers are really sensitive to stimuli. So if you make a decision, I'm going to pare down my wardrobe, I'm going to get rid of clutter, it can physically reduce the clutter in your life, which can also free up some space in your head. Because probably while you're doing that, you're thinking about other things and processing. And so it's sort of a manifestation of the what your brain's like inside, sort of outside, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we need to talk about the third pillar. Can you summarize the first two? And then, because I know we went on a bird walk.
Yes. All right. So the three pillars of task management. The first pillar is flexible idea capture or quick capture. So we're grabbing our ideas and we're able to record them. And then whether it's multiple systems, we bring them together in one space to review them. Column two, category two, is prioritization with some form of foresight. So looking out at the week, the month, the quarter, what are the things that I need to do in what order? And then category three is the action sequence. It's doing. Okay. What are the elements that I need to actually take action on by when, and how will I track them? Right. So whether that's like I'm doing like a Kanban system, you know, I'm to do, doing, and done, or accounting the dones, you know, whatever it might be, scratching things off a list, it goes from capturing to prioritizing to executing. And if we can break it down to its simple form, and I learned this, by the way, from Thomas Frank. I should cite my sources. Thomas Frank's like one of my favorite productivity gurus. When we can break it down to its most simple form, we realize that it's, you know, productivity and task management isn't like this monolith, right? That there's individual camps, and each individual camp has its different elements and strategies. And so we can kind of isolate and experiment and build out a task management system, a complex or simple, that helps us get things done.
You're talking about specifically to like, oh, there's a system for the first pillar. There's a system. What's it? And separating them like, oh, this pillar one has its own system. Pillar two, mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about? Okay.
Exactly right. Yeah. So like for you, your flexible idea capture could be like sticky notes and your bullet journal, right? Mm-hmm. And then you might take those and shuffle them in order to another notebook, right? Where you say, okay, let me look at everything and then I'm going to kind of make sense of it. Maybe your brain likes to put them in reverse order, well, it's hard for me to pick the most important, but I'm going to pick the least important, right? Maybe someone else has like a digital, I don't know, like a must, should, want table, you know, and they input data. This is what I must do. This is what I should do. This is what I want to do, plus a digital calendar, right? So we can all accomplish these things differently in accordance with our strengths and our profiles. But we have to do all three to be successful, right? We have to capture ideas. We have to organize them in terms of priority because you just can't get everything done. And ADHDers really struggle with time management, right? We're unrealistic every day.
Okay. I'm going to tell you I'm listening to the all three pillars. I'll tell you my way is, because I can see each pillar now. So the first one, my idea capture is, I'm literally, anybody that listens to the show, I'm a bullet journal freak. Everything goes in the bullet journal. It is an appendage of mine. I don't do anything else. No post-it notes or anything like that. It's just, everything's in a brain dump in the bullet journal. Then the prioritizing for me, it typically, I'm into the Eisenhower matrix, the urgent, not urgent, important, not important quad. Mm-hmm. But that's only if I need it. Usually I'll look at my list and I'll create my schedule for either the next day or as I look ahead. I'm very loose. I'm not rigid about it because I don't have a hardcore, like, this is what I do at 5 p.m. But what I do is, there are certain work sessions that I know I need to do, that I know I want to do. And so I pre-plan them. And then the doing part for me are timed work sessions. I'm a total timer dork. And so then the next day, and if I need it, I'll set it as an appointment. So I'll be like, 6 a.m., I'm doing a 45-minute work session on my website or writing a podcast episode. And so then I'll set the timer. And that'll be my doing of it. So I think that's how I attack each particular pillar.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit more clear to me, basing it on like looking at it, because then if there was ever a problem, I could look at it and go, well, which pillar is the broken pillar at the moment?
It allows you, it's supposed to empower you to triage, right? And figure out where's the breakdown. And your system is really great. And I like the idea that you're using, you know, the time blocking and scheduling things that are important and feeling that sense of urgency, maybe using like a Pomodoro timer. Things like that can be really helpful, but it's important to know yourself. Like, someone could listen to you, Russ, and be like, that sounds great. And it's a nightmare because they get anxiety from the timer and the scheduling is too rigid, you know? And so it's like, it's not one size fits all. And that's why we have to build our own.
Right. Okay. I need to talk to you about the Young Scholars Academy, because you are one of the great ones, man. The fact, like, I know who I am. And I know I'm 47 and I know who I am, and the insanity and the chaos that goes on inside of me. And you are helping kids, and can you talk about what you do?
Yeah. So the idea behind Young Scholars Academy is we're a virtual enrichment program. So I call us a virtual village. And the idea is that we take a strength-based approach to learning for differently wired, twice exceptional and gifted kids. So if you have a, you know, ADHD kiddo, a kiddo who's twice exceptional means that they have an exceptional strength area and a struggle area. So it could be like someone with ADHD and a really high IQ, or a classically, like, quote unquote, schoolhouse gifted student. We have a program that we have about 13 mentors who offer small group classes. And the idea is just developing strengths, getting out of the deficit-based medical model that exists, where we're all, you know, fixing and adjusting things that aren't working, and just helping our students explore the things that they love, that make sense in a 21st century setting, that help them connect with, I think, the two most important, what I call the two ingredients, is neurodivergent peers. So kids who are just like them, who are asynchronous, who have similar interests and curiosities and struggles. And then neurodivergent mentors who they can look up at and say, that's a person like me. That's Russ. He's grown up. He's been through it. And I'm going to be okay. And so we have about 150 families or so, 13 teachers. We offer summer camps during the summer for 9 weeks. And then during the school year, we have classes that run for 8-week semesters all through the entire school year. And the idea is just strength-based learning, learning stuff that you can't find anywhere else, robotics, coding. So we've got like 7-year-olds coding their own apps.
What?
Yeah, we have Minecraft, Dungeons and Dragons, speech and debate theater. I mean, we have World War One weaponry history, like really niche stuff like that our kids love. You know, I think like when I was designing Young Scholars Academy, I thought like, what are the cool classes in college? It's not like the one-on-ones, right? It's like the niche electives, right? It's like women in the Vietnam War. You're like, we're going to spend a semester on that, you know? And like, so I was like, how can we do that for kids who have these brilliant brains at a really young age?
Oh, you know,
they deserve
God.
That.
Yes. Yeah, you're awesome, dude. So, okay. So how do we find you? I'm going to link all this stuff. So this is all going to be in the show notes and everything. But can you tell people how to find you? And then I have a personal question I want to ask you.
Yeah, I could talk all day. So if you go to youngscholarsacademy.org, it depends on when this airs, but right now we're doing summer camps. So that's from June 19th to August 24th. And if you go to youngscholarsacademy.org, you can see the summer camp listing there.
What's the age group of the camps that are the people that go to the Young Scholars Academy?
So the camps are broken up into two cohorts during the summer. It's a little different during the school year. During the summer, our camps are 7 to 11, and then we have 12 to 16. And so those camps are running, they meet an hour a day for 5 days a week. And that way students can take just what they love. You can take one camp for 1 week if you want, you know, for 5 hours, or we have some kids taking 4 camps a day for 9 weeks, totally exploring that and staying, going class to class with their friends and hanging out and exploring the stuff they love.
And it's 100% virtual. They're doing this from their home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh man.
Yeah. So we have like three, so we've been around for 3 years and we have a handful of families that have been with us since the very beginning. And some of them are like homeschoolers on the road. They've just been traveling since the pandemic started. So every week they're in like a different Airbnb or like an RV or something. It's really cool. And they can join us from wherever. They go on vacation, but they want to take, you know, Dungeons and Dragons camp, right? It's like they can do that on the road, right? In Portugal or wherever they are. So it's super, super flexible. And it's really nice in that way. And it brings the kids together because, you know, a lot of ADHDers, especially and autistic students alike, really are marooned. Like they might be the only person like them. And again, you know, we need one another. We need to feel seen. Like when you and I first spoke, Russ, I was like, I feel so seen. You know, and we were kind of laughing about that, right?
I know.
Like, but it's true. Like you get me and I feel God, if that makes sense. And it's just a sense of belonging that like our students need. And they don't know they need it until they have it.
Yeah, I like that too. Like that connection where you're like, oh, I'm not alone in this sort of in this chaos. Like there's, we're all very similar, even though we have unique lives. We're all there's a similar glue to all of us. I feel like, yeah. Okay,
absolutely.
This is a bonus question thing that I wanted to make sure I asked, because it deals with emotional dysregulation, and I was in the car and I was thinking about this interview and I know a couple of people that have kids with ADHD and I know who I am. And, when I can get very emotionally dysregulated but I know it, you know, when my volcano pops and I'm in a situation, and I even told somebody at work this the other day, because I got mega stressed out at this chaotic job and I shut down. I avoid everybody and I close up and I go, I need to avoid because I don't want to say anything and I don't want to do anything. Impulsive and big. And we are so shitty at inhibiting ourselves. So that's the way that I do it. I just shut everything off and deal with it. And I go, and it takes me a while to come back down, but then I can get perspective and then I can ask myself the questions, do the cognitive behavioral stuff and blah, blah, blah. What about kids who don't have any of that experience, don't have, when their volcano blows, they're gone. How, I'm getting all hot about it. But like, I feel so bad for them. And I don't know what the help is there. How do you help kids like that? Or how do you help their parents? What's the methodology or the, I don't want to say treatment because that's dumb, but like, how do you help with that?
Yeah. No, it's a tough one. I think our kids feel big feelings, right? ADHDers are really empathic. They feel big feelings, they connect, and they, as you say, as adults and youngsters struggle to regulate those feelings, right? And if you go back to the example I was talking about before with the prefrontal cortex, like that is also the emotional control center, right? So the amygdala is where that fight, flight, or freeze part comes in, but those two are connected. So when we get to, like when you're saying like you have a hard time at work and you freeze, that's you protecting yourself and others around you. Kids do that too. They just don't always have the ability to voice it, right? So what we might do is use affirming language. Hey, I can see that this is really difficult for you right now. So our options are blank, right? Wow, I can tell that this is really having a big effect on you. And we know that empathy is one of the biggest disarming things that helps regulate us. Yes, you mentioned like CBT, like helping students understand their brains. Hey, if I'm feeling big feelings and I tap into that logical part of my brain, that's going to help, right? Like if my amygdala is hijacking my brain and then I need to count to 10, it can't be angry and count to 10 at the same time and do both effectively. So if I keep practicing the counting, those kinds of things can help. But it's holding up a mirror, letting kids feel seen. Hey, I get you. This is tough. I know this is scary. How are we learning right now when there's a fire going on in Canada or whatever is happening in Ukraine? We want to make sure that they feel seen, they feel validated, and let them know that we're going to be here for them when they're ready. And a lot of the times that is enough. If that's not enough, then we'll just grant them space. So like virtually, what we'll just do is have someone go into a breakout room and just message us like on Zoom when they're ready to come back, or they might leave and come back and that's all they could do. And they'll come back and maybe they're apologetic. Sorry. Hey, I get it. It's fine. You did a great job.
Oh God, that's so nice.
Yeah. I think it's like you wouldn't be mad at a blind person for bumping into a wall, right? So why do we do that with students who are not necessarily visually impaired, but maybe have cognitive struggles around things like behavior control and impulsivity control and so forth?
Yeah, I think, well, maybe part of that too is from the grown-up standpoint of control of like, I need you to be in line with the rest, or I need you to I need you to be in the sit down position or whatever. You know, I think about God, kids in school now are the idea of not moving. That to me is like, well, then part of the responsibility there is on the parent or on the grown up to validate whatever is going on with that and that's okay, right?
Yeah. And I think we've seen a huge, like if you saw one of our classes, we're obviously not the norm. Like we've got kids pacing around and doing jumping jacks, and a lot of our students might like stim, they're moving around and they've got fidgets and things, and it's like they're off camera, but as long as they keep talking, we know they're there because they're pacing, you know. But you can't get that in a lot of, you know, it's like it works because we get them and they get it. Like there's expectations and like you got to be on the spot, but it's okay if you're, you know, doing XYZ. And but if you go to like a public school or something, right, you got like 40 kids in a class, it's like those kids don't have a procedure for like, hey, I need to stim, I need to move around, I need to fidget. Like when I was in high school, I was like, wait, I need to walk a lot. And I did the math. I have 8 periods a day. If I leave 5 minutes a day, I'll miss a whole block because that's 40 periods. Yeah, 40 minutes, right? So I was like, let me like tap into this. I need to get up. I like to walk 8 times 5 is 40. So now I've figured out how to hack the system and meet my needs. But if my teachers were really, really good, they could have been like, Sam, I know you need to walk around a lot. Why don't you just pace in the back of the class? That's not going to bother anyone. And I would have stayed in the class and not missed 40 minutes. But I think that we have to be flexible. And I don't think it's, you know, what was the purpose of education 100 years ago? It was to prepare kids for factories, right? But we're not going into factories. This is not the Gilded Age. We're in an intellectual era. Honestly, we're in a new era, even with like AI and everything. And we really don't need to condition our kids to behave a certain way so much as we need to condition them to think a certain way, which is asking big questions and thinking divergently. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think not fostering compliance not fostering, you know, get in line, follow orders is more important.
We're coming full circle. It's coming back to us. Our time is coming. Oh, the normies, watch out. Our time is coming. Oh my God. Sam, thank you so much for coming on to the show, man. I look up to you, dude. Like, the stuff that you're doing is, it's the good work. You're doing the good work. I joke about it, but it means a lot. And I would have loved somebody like you in my world when I was a kid. I think that would have been phenomenal. So thank you for coming on. And then I'm going to have you come back on. This is what we should do. We should tell people, if you're a parent of a kid who's twice exceptional or singular exceptional or just anything, but if you have questions for Sam, email me. The contact form is in all the podcast note things. You can find it. Ask away. And then we'll bring you back on, dude. And you can break it all down.
I would love that. I love Q&As. And I love this show, Russ. Thank you so much. I would really, you know, I look up to you, the way in which you're showing up for people and bringing different people together and just the way you keep it real. I think it's so refreshing. You have such an open mind. I think you embody the questions, the insecurities, the middle of the night thoughts that people have and you share them. And it's that stuff that is so valuable because you're creating a hub where people can have their questions answered and get value. So thank you.
Oh, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, yeah. You mentioned that you have a resource for the listeners. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah. So I essentially have a resource, which is exactly everything we talked about today. So it helps go through the three frameworks. So it will help your listeners, everyone listening, you can reflect currently, how are you doing 1, 2, 3, like Russ did today? How are you quick capturing and planning and executing? And then there's a middle part, which will expose you to, you click a link and there's a ton, over 20 different systems that are already in place. And you can explore through those and then just take notes. You know, what do you like? What speaks to you? What do you not like? You know, that's the easy stuff to figure out. And then three, at the bottom of it, you actually go build your system. And that's where you start to collect data and maybe use it for a week, make a tweak, use it for a week. And so this is kind of bringing everything together in one space where you can, I have a video at the top where I show kind of one system that I use. I walk you through a bunch of different systems and then give you a platform upon which you can build your own. So awesome. You just input your email. And then there's some like bonus resources I send after too, because it's all like delivered via email.
Oh, that's rad. Awesome. Thank you.
Oh my God, what a great guy. Go check out his website, everybody. And in the show notes, there's going to be links to that free resource for helping your kiddos create a task management system that works for them. I checked it out for myself too. You know, hey, if it works, it works. He also wanted me to give the ADHD Big Brother listeners a special discount on his summer program. So if you guys are interested, I put that coupon code in the show notes. Use it while it works. You know what I'm saying? And if you are a parent or someone with a question for Sam, click on the ADHD Big Brother contact link, shoot it over to me. If we get enough, we're just going to have Sam back on and we'll do a Q&A because Sam and I aren't done talking. I'm going to sponge out as much as I can from that guy. I hope this has been as enlightening for you guys as it is for me. And with that, I hope you guys have a fantastic week and I will talk to you later.